This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Very glad to be with you this afternoon. We're going to chat with our good friend Steve Morgan, talk a little bit about health and exercise and a little bit about how to keep, I know we've always talked about it in the past, and that's been how you work out in extreme in heat. But this year, boy, we've got even extreme heat. I just wonder, Steve, is there anything more you need to do in this stream? I know we've always told people to take water and things, but boy, with the heat being as extreme as it is there something more you should do?
Once again, Earl, we've talked about it before, and it doesn't hurt to go over it again, but you want to make sure that you're consuming not just water, but you also need your electrolytes that come from bananas, such as potassium, and you need some sodium and magnesium, which comes from dark green leafy vegetables. And then finally, you're going to need, you got potassium, sodium, calcium, and magnesium, those four. Calcium, the last one. So yeah. You want to make sure you're getting those in a variety of different beverages and foods, none of which should contain alcohol. However, if you do, for every 6 ounces of alcohol that you consume, you can trust that you'll need almost a quart of water to help your liver and your body process the alcohol in this type of heat. So in other words, you could overheat your body just by your body pulling more of the internal fluids that are available to help with the digestion of the alcohol. So alcohol is not a very good idea when temperatures are scorching over 100 plus. It's just not a good way to go about your day. You must find some shade and you must consume fluids to go with that.
Yeah, so that's something that you definitely should do. What about for people? I mean, you know, people are now starting to get into some of these fitness camps, these boot camp type workouts,
sure.
And they're pretty high intensive workout. Is that good to do during this time or during with the weather being so hot as it is?
Well, I mean, for a lot of us out here, you know, me, Earl, I'm a warrior, you know, and like I told people on the show, you know, I've trained in desert climates, I've trained in sub-zero, you know, so, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that you can't do it, but you have to know where you're beginning. You have to understand that you have to, now you're getting into not only water or fluid replacements, but now you're getting into carbohydrate replacement as well when you start sweating so profusely like we do when we do tire pulls and sled pushes. You know, and when it's 105, 102, whatever it is outside, if that's the day that we're supposed to train on, that's where we're training. It may rain, but we're going to train. So, you know, when you train like that, then you got to look at other things other than just your water and your electrolytes. Those are always, that's just a given. Water and electrolytes are a given. When you start training harder, you want to start looking at recovery drinks. You want to start to look at recovery concoctions with protein and some carbohydrate mixed in there. Either fruit or vegetables can be added to the protein. You want to look at different things as you get more intense. So, yeah, it's a completely different ball of wax.
Okay. Now, what about, you know, we've talked somewhat this last week. We had got back to weights, and we hadn't talked much about the weight training. And we know that's something that everyone needs to include in their workouts, because I've seen people doing weight training and, of course, doing the bands and also using the balls. I know there's a lot of different ways when you train. So is that good to just mix everything if, you know, working with the balls and working with the weights and other things in your weight training?
Yeah, the variety is good. Yes. And also the variety is positive mentally. It helps you get through the workout and some of the monotonous movements that are incorporated in programs. But on the other side, it's good for you anatomically speaking. And, you know, you don't wear out a particular group of muscles from the same angle over and over again with approximately about the same loads. The variety is good for those two primary reasons. People will come up with, you know, 15, 20 different reasons why bands and balls are better than this or that. I don't think one is better than the other. I think that if, you know, used in conjunction with one another, you can get a complete program, and that helps you maintain the program. And that's all we really want to do here, right,
mm-hmm.
is comply. As long as you're in compliance with what you're supposed to do, you're going to have a better opportunity to be functional. I don't know if you know it, Earl. A gentleman by the name of Robert Kennedy passed away. He was the one of the editors and publishers of Oxygen Magazine. He was an avid fitness person, and he passed away with cancer. But 2 weeks before he passed away, he did 26 reps with 400 pounds on the leg press.
Wow.
So he was never going to stop training.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's the way, that's what we talk about here on the show, is just find something that you can do, but don't stop doing it. You have to keep training. You know, when cancer comes, and, you know, I have aunts right now. I have an aunt that passed recently from cancer, and then I have an aunt right now that has cancer. And but neither one of them have gotten up and done anything, did anything about it. And it's just ravaging. You know, to watch it run its course. But for those of you that are listening, you know, you really want to get an exercise program, stay with it, change it, add a little bit here. Every now and then ask for a gift certificate for a birthday or for a particular holiday. Make a request from your loved one or loved ones to buy you a session or here or there or a piece of equipment. And just keep adding to it over time. I think you'll find it to be very enjoyable.
You know, Steve, something I know we do it all the time, but let's do it again. Talk about the pluses that you get from working out. A lot of people work out, and maybe they don't really understand why they're working out. We always tell them that it's good for them, but sometimes I think people just don't realize how good it is and what the benefits are.
Well, when I got in to this business, to the health and fitness industry, you know, 20 years ago now, Earl, there was all this talk about I didn't want to add muscle. People were afraid of adding muscle. They treated muscle as if it were steroids. They treated muscle as if it was like a plague. People didn't want to add muscle. And that's why during the early stages of the health and fitness industry craze, the wave, I should say, the early points of the wave, it were racket clubs. It was cardiovascular-driven activities. It was sport-related activities that these clubs popped up in neighborhoods and subdivisions of suburbia. And they were the first outlets where people were getting competitive with racquetball, handball. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Yep, the badminton even, I mean, in certain mm-hmm. parts geographically of the U.S., badminton was picking up, indoor badminton, because you didn't have to worry about the wind, and it was very competitive. And so, and then there was a graduation into aerobics. Dr. Ken Cooper started people getting into aerobics. I don't know if those that are listening, there's a theme here. Anything but strength training in the early days, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anything... All the cross training was an option, but people just did not want to strength train.
Yeah.
A majority of individuals, even athletes, did not want to strength train. They
That's
thought
true.
That it was something that would bulk them up. Like I said earlier, muscle was a bad thing. You know, to a large part of the people that were involved in fitness, muscle was a bad thing. And they only had one concept, and that was muscle would bulk you up. And now, through sports science and research and watching what happens with steroid use and what happens with Olympic training and powerlifting and finding these now that this cross-training is making people more functional, strength training is, like I said 16 years ago, Earl, it's the fountain of youth. It always has been, always will be. If you add muscle, it helps you, number one, control your metabolism. Number one, it allows you to eat more because you need more calories. It allows you to be more functional. It allows you to orthopedically be able to do things more biomechanically correct in your day-to-day activities, which, once again, will stop you from getting all these little nitpicking injuries, overuse injuries, because you're not biomechanically aligned because you don't have the muscle to align the bones. I mean, it's deep when you start talking about why you need muscle and why muscle is the fountain of youth. I mean, strength training is the fountain of youth to provide you with more muscle. And people just don't understand that you need to be strong. It does so much.
You know, Steve, you know, we entered such a long time ago, but one of the things when we're starting out, you know, basketball players, for a long time, they would not lift weights. I still run into players who think strength training is bad for them. I mean, it's not as much as it used to be, but there are still a lot of players out there that thinks that if they lift too much, it'll throw their shot off and like that. How can you convince people like that who still have that in their minds that strength training isn't good for them?
Well, sometimes it takes a particular, you know, situation to arise, you know, but we've led young kids to the water and they still didn't drink. You know, we've had guys that have been privileged enough, and I do mean privileged enough, to see Denzel Valentine and Anthony Clemens and Derek Nelson and you know, and some of our studs, John Jones, you know, train. And they've had an opportunity as young kids to watch, and they still will not commit to training as a priority. So, you know, for parents that are listening, once again, you know, you can do everything right. You can take them to a professional and you can show them other kids that are going on to do things because of the strength and conditioning and how it's impacted their lives and how disciplined they are and yada, yada, shamalama. You can do all of the song and dance you want. At the end of the day, the kid has to commit. At the end of the day. You know, whether it's a wellness program, whether it's a strength, you can try to lace it with whatever you want. You can have rewards built in, but at the end of the day, the kid has to commit. And if they don't commit, then what you're going to get is some, you know, yo-yoing. They'll get heavy. They'll lose a little bit of weight when they get peer pressure. Or if a college coach comes in and looks at them, you know, then they'll want to hurry up and lose weight, which is bad. It's not a good thing. But once they commit to strength training, every day they get better. Every week they get better. They feel good about themselves. Their self-esteem increases. Their grades increase. Their injury reduces. Their injury potential reduces dramatically. They're better balanced. They listen better. I mean, there's just so many good things that come out of the discipline from training.
And yes, and we certainly hope that we can continue to convince more people to get training and stick with it. That's always been the problem, Steve. The thing that gets me, though, I don't know why so many people, they seem to latch on to the bad advice, you know, or the bad things, you know,
right.
You hear. And that's the biggest problem. I mean, it seems like we're constantly fighting that that when people are bad-mouthing something, it's like they gravitate to that bad information.
I know, Earl. I've watched it for a while, and I don't understand. I mean, it's really, there's a lot of good trainers out here now that are floating around Lansing and that you can get some good advice from, and everyone's not trying to rip you off. However, there are, on the other side, right here in town, there are quite a few that will rip you off. So, you know, it would be nice if everyone would be on the up and up, but unfortunately they're not. And, you know, the tapes, don't buy tapes. I can tell you right now. And some people say, well, Steve, they're better than nothing. Actually, you know, at some point they're just nothing because you've done a tape for, you know, 675 times and, you know, you could have went and rented it and wrote down the finer points and that would have been that. You don't have to buy a series. You know, we have video rentals. You can go online and you can download from YouTube different segments of different things if you want to change daily. It's all right here for you, you know, and right here in Lansing, we have some good stuff going on. You know, we have two very good publications with Sport Magazine and the Healthy magazines that are out here that cover those topics very well. So people just have to look, Earl. They really do. They have to look. And we're right here. You know, it's right there for you.
Hey, it's always good talking with you, Steve. We'll be back next week and talk a little bit more, my friend.
Okay, Earl. And if you know, if you need anything, give us a call over here at MAP at 517-944-5100. And, of course, we're on the web. And just give us a call if you need anything out there, and we'll try to help you out.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Okay, Earl. Okay. Thank you.
Yep, we'll talk to you later, buddy. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Steve Morgan talking with us, Health and Physical Fitness, right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break, right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Romney rakes it in. Both candidates tussle over jobs, tax cuts, and tax returns. The GOP candidate addresses the NAACP, but the president passes. The House votes on a repeal of health care again. Thad Cotter resigns. An ethics investigation trips up Shelley Berkeley, and no recount for Charlie Rangel. I'm Neil Cohn, and political junkie Ken Rudin joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Scott Pohl. Thanks for joining us. Today will be sunny and our high will reach the upper 80s. Mostly clear overnight with a low of 59, sunny and a high back in the upper 80s tomorrow. Friday will be mostly sunny until midday and then cloudy with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Friday's high 88.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Well, now we're going to change and talk a little bit of pro football. With the NFL season right around the corner, everyone will be reporting to training camp very soon. So we'll talk a little bit about the Lions today and their chances for this year. You know, they've got everything is settled now. Still a few contracts that we know. Cliff Averill is out there. He's trying to get his settled. They haven't settled Drew Brees yet. There are still some contracts that haven't been settled. But for the most part, guys are under contract, and they'll be reporting and getting ready to play. So let's bring in our good friend Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press. Talk a little bit about the Detroit Lions. And Dave, how you doing, my friend?
Good, Earl. How you doing?
Hey, doing good. You know, you wrote about Cliff Averill in this morning's paper. You think that's really going to get done by Monday?
You know, Earl, I am not sure. I just took a little break from my vacation to write that. And, you know, I'm coming back this weekend full time to see if this thing does get done. I haven't ruled it out. But, you know, gun to my head right now, I'd probably guess no. I think there's just a hold up maybe in how the two sides view each other. Maybe I should say the Lions have so much money that they're going to have to commit down the road to Matthew Stafford and Ndamukong Suh, those kind of cornerstones of their team, that I just don't get the sense that they're willing to do the same for Cliff Averill right now.
That's a shame because he's a key part. I mean, he was a very big piece to their success thus far. I mean, yes, a lot of it is mop-up duty where he cleans up and benefits from Ndamukong Suh's double teams and such. But he does a very good job. So I really think they need him quite a bit back there, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. No, look, he's their best pass rusher. You know, he 11 sacks, 6 forced fumbles. That doesn't happen by accident. You know, so I think he's an important part of what they do. And I think they'd miss him dearly if he wasn't there, say, next year if he hit free agency or whatever and they didn't have him around. But, and like I said, Earl, I haven't – it's not a fact that it's – I'm not 100% that it's not going to happen. I think there's enough – the Lions value him highly enough and both sides want to get it done. The fact that it still could happen, but I just have my reservations as to whether the sides will come close enough. Of course, we know that deadlines do make deals happen, so there's still some hope.
Yeah. Now, what about the Drew Brees situation? I mean, it appears they keep saying that they're only about a million and a half apart, but yet it doesn't look like that deal is going to get done either.
Well, I think that one stands a much better chance of getting done than Cliff. I mean, you hear a lot of posturing kind of in the time leading up to you know, Monday's deadline, and I would expect something to get done there, just because I don't think the, you know, the Saints without Drew Brees are a totally different animal, and I think New Orleans realizes that. And obviously Drew's going to be there this year no matter what, but, I mean, going forward, you know, you can't have him on what it would take next year, you know, a $24 million nearly salary cap number. You know, you just can't commit that much of your salary cap to one player. I think the Saints know that. They realize that they need him around. And if I'm a Lions fan, I'm going to watch this closely, because I think that's going to have some implications for Matthew Stafford down the road. You know, Stafford's deal is coming due in a couple of years, and he might be at the point next year where, you know, his cap number is so high that the Lions are going to have to do something about it and maybe renegotiate his deal. And Matt's obviously, you know, 9 years younger than Drew Brees and coming off a pretty good season, and he's represented by Tom Condon just like Brees is. So I think there's these negotiations are something to watch to see what Brees gets, because I would guess that Stafford would top that in his next deal.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, the way the new CBA is working out, it's, I don't know how much it benefits players, but it does seem like they have some benefits. I know they thought the new salary cap would work more for first-round picks, and we've got, at least 9 out of the top 10 first-round picks haven't been signed. So what's going on? Why are so many first-round picks are hesitant to sign?
Well, I think the top of the draft, it's just about the language of the contracts, you know, whether they have, whether a guy gets cut and who's going to be responsible for the money when he re-signs. Say if somebody gets cut before their fourth year and they're guaranteed, you know, all those deals at the top of the draft are guaranteed. You know, and so if you're guaranteed, say, $2 million in that last year and you get cut, well, are you still going to get that $2 million from the team that cuts you, even if you sign a deal with a new team that's going to, you know, pay you, you know, say a million of that, and the teams want that money to be set off basically from what they would owe the player. So I think it's just a matter of once a couple of these start falling in line, you know, all of them will, and it's probably just a matter of time, because Luke Kuechly, ninth pick in the draft for Carolina, you know, he had some of that, or he did not have that language in, so I can't imagine that the rest of the top 10 picks will either. Later on down the draft, where the Lions are with Riley Reiff, it's more a matter of how much is going to be guaranteed in that fourth year. And I think you'll see the Lions get something done here relatively soon. But, you know, that might, and I stress might, Earl, that might depend on what Cleveland does at 22 with Brandon Weeden, who usually would, you know, in the case of a quarterback, would get some sort of a little bit of a bump in pay.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, when you look at the Lions, though, this year, how do you think, I mean, since this league has really turned now to almost almost 100% a passing league, it's so strong pass heavy, how do you think the back end, I mean, it looks like we probably should look a lot more at the back end of the Lions this year. How do you think the back end is going to serve? You know, we know they've had a lot of changes coming into this year, but how do you think the back end is going to be?
Well, it's gonna hinge a lot on what they do up front. And Earl, I got to do a little hit for ESPN later on today, and it's kind of the biggest question, you know, on each team heading into the season, into camp, and that's the biggest question for the Lions, without a doubt, is, you know, what are they going to do in the secondary? Because you look at this team, and you know, they gave up 90 points the last two games, and they didn't force a fumble or didn't force a punt in the playoff loss to the Saints, and you can say all you want, and I've heard this plenty from fans about injuries and how the Lions secondary was playing great, you know, early on in the season, and I just don't know. A, if that's the case, they played better. But, you know, B, you're going to play 16 games again this year, and you got those same guys back, and those same guys have proven to be injury-prone, you know, their first couple years in the league, talking about Lewis Delmas and Chris Houston, some of those guys. So just to chalk it all up to injuries and say everything's going to be fine this year, that's not something that I'm ready to do.
Yes, and, you know, we've seen Mikael LeSure, who's been injured, and a couple of the key offensive guys. I mean, we know injuries is a part of the game, but, boy, sometimes it just hits a team so hard, and it looks like the Lions are one of those teams. They really can't afford to have injuries, but they've had a lot of them so far.
Well, I think their depth is better this year. You know, I think that's essentially what the draft the last 2 years have gone towards. You know, you look at it, there really aren't many starters that they took the last 2 years, but you have Nick Fairley playing a key role in the defensive line, and LeSure, and this year you're going to have Bill Bentley at cornerback, and, you know, Riley Reiff might end up starting, but, you know, you have a number of backups that I think the Lions have really done better at. But you're right from the standpoint of, you know, if Matthew Stafford gets hurt again, if Calvin Johnson succumbs to the Madden curse, you know, in that secondary where they are a little bit thinner, you know, I think that's really where the biggest questions are.
Hey, with Nick Farley, Mekhi Lashour, and the other problems that the other players that have had problems in the offseason, how are the Lions looking to handle that going into this year with the problems that they had last year?
Well, just getting them back around the team, I think, will be a good thing. I mean, you know, you look at all six of the incidents, and it's come when the players have been away from Allen Park. And so from that standpoint, the fact that the team is going to report here rookies on the 23rd, veterans on the 26th, you know, that that bodes well for them staying out of trouble if they can manage to do that for the next 2 weeks. So, but they're ready to put that behind them. You know, the Lions haven't said a whole heck of a lot about it. They've obviously expressed their disappointment in statements, and, you know, they've chosen to not talk about it much publicly, but it's been an embarrassment for the franchise. I don't think anybody can argue that. And you know, frankly, I think it's something that the Lions need to make sure they have under control, because you're already looking at Mekhi Lashour facing a 2-game suspension. You know, Nick Farley could face a suspension as well. Aaron Berry, the most recent guy that got into trouble. Now, you know, history shows us that usually for a first-time DUI offense, you don't get suspended. But still, that cloud, that threat still hangs over, you know, your head until Roger Goodell rules. So I think the Lions are just going to be happy to get back to playing football.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about this whole Jonathan Vilma suing Roger Goodell? It looks like Goodell's got a lot more problems out of this New Orleans situation that I'm assuming he didn't anticipate having as much trouble with the players and with the NFL, with the union, as he's having. Do you see that?
Show all the proof, and then there won't be an issue, right?
Yep. That's what I've been saying. Just show him the proof.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, I don't know what's going to end up going on with that stat. Obviously, everything's collectively bargained here, so I don't know if I'm not a lawyer. I can't tell you if that lawsuit is even going to, hold up in court, or if that's going to be tossed out, if you're going to have to go to an arbitrator or kind of what. I don't know that there's any sort of slander there, but, you know, I think I'm with you, Earl. I think the NFL should show, when it comes down to these players and their livelihood and the severity of the suspensions that have been handed down, I think the NFL needs to show a little bit more proof that they engaged in bounties, not just pay for performances, but pay for injuries.
Yeah, they should. I mean, that's only fair. If you've already tried and convicted the players of something, you at least should show them why they're going to jail, in essence.
You're talking about guys with limited earning potentials, or a limited span of years in which they can earn. And to,
exactly,
in the case of Jonathan Vilma, who's towards the end of that, to sit him out for an entire season, you know, likely next year he would be cut or have to restructure his deal. You know, I think you're really cutting into his earning potential there. And you know, look, I've talked to a lot of players about the issue over the last few months, and I think there's a lot of cases across the NFL where players have been paid for performance. You know, you throw a couple $100 in for a great block or something like that, and I think it's another leap to say that you want to intentionally injure somebody. And even if somebody might have said, you know, $10,000 for a guy that knocks Brett Favre out of the game, well, some of that talk can be braggadocio too. So
yeah.
I don't know that he ever really intended to injure anybody.
Yeah, because that's the thing. As we know, there's a lot of braggadocio in football, Dave. We've seen that and heard that for years. And there's always players talking smack. And how do you know the difference between a guy just talking smack or really being for real?
Right, and you know, from that standpoint, Earl, that's why I understand that, you know, you don't. And so Goodell, you know, had to come down with some sort of hammer on these instances. And, you know, I don't necessarily take everything that the players are saying and believe that wholeheartedly. I mean, I tend to believe that there was some sort of proof there, maybe beyond just, what we've seen so far and somebody saying that Vilma offered $10,000. But I would like to see more evidence of it. And I do think that, in a lot of instances, this is guys talking and you know, just, type A macho personalities kind of, barking at each other as a way to fire each other up.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100% with that. But I guess we'll just have to wait. Hopefully, I guess one day, maybe we'll see some proof or whatever proof the NFL has. But until then, it's still a lot of speculation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's kind of what we're dealing with now. We've been dealing with for months. So I don't know that it's going to change. And, if we're sitting back to the Lions standpoint, I mean, look, I look at the Saints as one of the biggest wild cards in the NFL this year, because who knows what's going to happen, how what that team is going to look like. You know, no Sean Payton, who in my eyes is one of the best coaches in the game. Drew Brees has this contract thing hanging over him for now. You know, they're without Joe Vitt. They're without a lot of guys, you know, on that. The coaching staff, they're GM for half the season, you know. So I think, look, they have some good coaches in place. Steve Spagnuolo is a new defensive coordinator. But, you know, I think there's a lot of question marks hanging over that team right now.
Yeah. Well, Dave, let me put you on the hot spot here. What do you think are the weaknesses of the Lions offensively and defensively going into the season?
Well, defensively, like we talked about, that secondary, that's still the biggest concern, and whether they can generate a consistent enough pass rush to stop some of these high-powered passing attacks. You know, Earl, I think when I look at it, look, the defense is a huge question, but to me, the key for the Lions having a successful season is going to be that offense. They averaged, they were fourth in the league last year. They averaged about 29 points per game. But when it came to playing the NFC playoff teams, who they went 0-6 against last year, including that loss to the Saints in the playoffs, they averaged about 10 points fewer per game. The offense just wasn't as consistent, didn't score as much against some of those top-notch teams. I mean, that's if you take out that Week 17, you know, shootout with the Packers when Green Bay rested its, you know, all of its starters. But every other game, the 49ers, the Falcons, you know, the Saints, the Bears, even, you know, the Lions struggled to score some points at times. And those are the teams that they're going to be competing against for playoffs this year. So I think the offense needs to be a little bit more consistent. And if they can develop some sort of ground game, if they can keep Jabbed Best, McKellisher, those guys healthy, I think that might help.
Okay, well, that certainly sounds good. We just hope that the Lions, I mean, everyone is very optimistic thus far about the Lions in the upcoming season. What about the special teams this year? We haven't talked much about them. How do you see the special teams doing?
Hey, they got a little punting battle is going to be going on here. They got two punters in camp, Ryan Donahue, the young guy that they kept last year, over Nick Harris, and then Ben Graham, who filled in most of the second half of the season when Donahue was hurt. So that's something that's going to shake out here in camp. And I'm anxious to see. I mean, I think both those guys have pretty good legs, and the Lions obviously kept down here for a reason. But Graham did a solid job, and he's a reliable vet. So we'll see how that one shakes out. And then always reliable Jason Hanson. I think the Lions obviously have to get better in the return department. If Ryan Broyles is healthy, that might help and in coverage, because they really struggled early there last year. But, you know, overall, I think special teams should be a plus for the Lions this year.
Yeah, how many more years do you think Jason Hanson will kick? I mean, he's been around a long time. I'm thinking, what, maybe a couple of years at the most. But how long do you think we'll see Jason kicking?
Well, this is the last year of his contract, Earl. So this
okay,
is a,
this might be
one.
It.
I mean, he's 41, 42, you know, so and I don't know, you know, with the Lions, we talked about, you know, April early on and all the cap commitments they have. I don't know if you want to be paying a kicker $3 million when you have these deals with Stafford and Sue and, you know, everybody else coming up, and you have to work out some deals for Sammy Hill and Corey Williams if you want to bring him back. I mean, some other key parts of the defense. So, you know, I think Hanson's got this year. You know, he might have a couple more years left in him. He hasn't showed many signs of slowing down, and I think the new kickoff rules help him. But I wouldn't just chalk it up that he's going to be around for the next 4 years quite yet.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's the thing with kickers. Even if they're worth the money or they're worth the pay, when you get to that age and where Hanson is, you know, the teams are reluctant to give you much more money than what you've been getting. They probably want you to – I would probably say they probably want him to take a pay cut if he wants to stay with the team.
Quite possible. I mean, like I said, you know, this is the final year of his deal, and I think, you know, that's something that we'll have to see exactly how that shakes out. I mean, a kicker, you know, I asked him how close retirement was, or if he had thought about that, and back a couple months ago, and, you know, he said that's the furthest thing from his mind right now, and he's just concerned about making this team and, you know, putting himself in position, because he might have some of the biggest pressure kicks of his career to be able to handle those. And, you know, I fully believe him, but I think at some point we're going to have to cross that bridge and talk about, you know, Jason Hanson's future.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, Dave, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I know we'll be talking a lot during the season. I wanted to just get a little bit of your thoughts before practice starts, but hey, it's good. It's going to be a good year, and I look forward to hearing from you during the season, buddy.
All right, Earl. Sounds good.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Dave Burkett talking sports from the Detroit Free Press right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Beneath the headlines about famine and war, Africa's booming. 7 of the world's 10 fastest growing economies are African. Teens snap up Converse shoes in shopping malls. Walmart, IBM, and Google are moving in, and many carry a new sense of optimism. I'm Neil Conan. Africa's economic rise plus the evolution of TV dads. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Our high today will be 88 degrees with sunny skies, mostly clear, and a low tonight in the upper 50s. Sunny and a high back in the upper 80s Thursday. For Friday, we'll start out mostly sunny, then cloudy with a chance of afternoon rain and thunderstorms and a high in the upper 80s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll-free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And Alex, I've got a question for you. I've got just a very simple question for you. Who should have been the MVP for the National League last night?
That's very tough because, as you know, Earl, that game, it was hard to watch, as both of us are. I mean, you are a National League guy, Earl.
Yep.
We know that. But for me as an American League guy, that was very hard to say. But, I mean, who in your mind to start?
Well, I'll say this. I'll let you put it on me. Justin Verlander should have been the MVP for the National League. Giving up 5 runs in the first inning, I think it's no contest.
Yeah, I mean, look how great he did. But, yeah, I mean, that was a very good game to watch. I mean, you definitely could see, we were talking on the show earlier the day before about how we really wanted to see these guys play a real game and really have that firepower to really, you know, put their heart in that game and try to win that home field advantage. But for me, Earl, the MVP of the game had to be the San Francisco Giants, all of them.
Because, yeah, that's true. They were good.
Because for what they did in that game, for one, their division in the NL is a very difficult division. And two, they prove that they can play against the best hitters of the game and lead their team, regardless of if an ace, as in Justin Verlander, was pitching. So for me, it's all the San Francisco Giants together. Maybe not one MVP, but that's my answer for you.
Yeah, San Francisco is really good, that's for sure. They just had a heck of a game. And, you know, it was a good game in general, especially if you like the National League or National League. We know we live a lot in this area. Most of the people are American League fans, which is fair. That's understandable. But, yeah, I'm still an old guy who likes some of those old National Leaguers. So it was a good win for them, and I had a fun teasing a couple of my friends on the National League getting another victory. Everything in these All-Star games, it always goes in some kind of series. I mean, the American League had won 10 out of the last 12. Before then, like, the National League had won, like, 20 of 23, I think it was, something like that. I have to go back and look at it. But it's a streaky game. It's always been a streaky game, and now – the National League has won 3 in a row, so maybe we're on another streak. But that's the way the league has been all these years. There's always been somebody has been hot, and someone has been trying to play catch up. So we'll just have to look at that all year long. But it's quite a feat for the National League to come back and finally win 3 in a row here. So it's been congratulations to them for their wins.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing about that, even though the National League did win, is I want to take a moment to discuss about the Royals fans. I mean, that game, they did have one guy competing, you know, that was Billy Butler, their one guy for the All-Star game. And if you do remember, Robinson Cano took his spot in the Home Run Derby, which he was slated to be competing in that. And regardless of as though Cano did not hit any home runs, which was, you know, since Brandon Inge back in 09, that was the last time someone hit 0 home runs. It was very good to see, you know, he did receive a couple boos, but the Royals fans, for the most part, were very supportive, regardless that the AL lost, regardless that they did not have a majority of players competing, and regardless of Billy Butler in the All-Star game, he did come in and hit a ground ball out, but those Royals fans, I do want to applaud them.
Well, they were pretty good, except Robinson and Cano, they booed him pretty well. And, even though he's a Yankee, yes, and he didn't select a Butler for that home run derby, that was his choice on who would be competing the home run derby. And Kansas City took it out on him. I don't think they should have taken it out on him because he's part of their league. They're part of their team. They should have been more supportive. But as Butler said, Cano said, the Kansas City fans, they were yelling epithets at his family during the game while they were going to the restroom and things like that. So he said they crossed the line. So I'm not, we weren't there, so we don't know. But that's what he said, that they crossed the line. So that's if that happened, that's unfortunate because, they're all playing for the same side in this case.
No, I do see that. And how about this, Earl? What if every team hosting the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby had one home player competing? Because if I was a fan and I was watching that game, it's hard for the fan interaction to really, really get into a home run derby if they don't have their one guy competing. You remember in 05 when we had the All-Star game here in Detroit, we had Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Despite Bobby Abreu playing as well as he did, the fans were really into it, not mainly because of Pudge Rodriguez, but that played a significant role in a lot of the fan excitement and the emotion. So I think in future All-Star games and home run derbies, I personally, Earl, would love to see one player, regardless if he's a good hitter or not, compete in that home run derby.
Yeah, I think that would be fair in all honesty. Because most teams, just about every team in the league, has one guy who's hitting a lot of home runs. And you could certainly make a case for that guy being and concluded in the home run derby. Like I say, it's an exhibition. It's a fun game, and that's what when I brought up Verlander. He said even after he got torched, he said, "Hey, it was just a fun game." You know, I want him to take it seriously, but he said it was a fun game. I had fun out there, even though I got beat up. I didn't like it to end that way, but it should have been more fun. But that's the thing. You look at how they treat these games these days, they just treat them as a fun exhibition game. They don't take these games seriously anymore, which I was talking about yesterday.
No, sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And regardless if they don't take it seriously anymore, Verlander did get hit on quite a bit.
Yes, he did.
And I said this even yesterday. It did worry me about him starting, not because of him getting hit on and maybe his composure going down and it was more of his arm that I was concerned about leading into the next series and after the All-Star break. But now, Earl, we saw Justin Verlander struggle quite a bit.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? And even for the listeners, they should call in. What were your thoughts on Verlander?
Well, Verlander, he just got hyped, followed up in the hype. He just got caught up in all the hype and everything. I mean, he usually starts out throwing in the 80s, the high 80s, 90s, but he started out throwing 100 miles an hour. And with throwing 100 miles an hour, he had no clue where the ball was going. And you could tell that, he just had no clue. He started out throwing too hard and just got up high, caught up in the hype of the game in the event being his first time starting an All-Star game. So he just got caught up in the hype. I'm thinking he'll be okay once the regular season and the game starts counting when they get back underway again.
Oh, yeah, I sure do hope so. But, besides the fact that, I did see that, he was throwing high 100s right out the gate. So I'm sure, when pitchers usually warm up starting pitchers before the game, they do, they toss a little bit in the bullpen. But he must have really had a hard bullpen session to come out and toss 100. So with that must have really taxed the arm. But at the same time, on the counter argument here, the fact that he did have that hard bullpen session and threw 100 right out of the gate, that really got his arm in what would be a regular start. So in the All-Star game, since he pitched one inning, and let's say he did throw 80s or 90s and that was it, that would, I think, mess a little bit with his rhythm, because in a full start of Justin Verlander, he gets 100 miles an hour. His arm is used to that rhythm that he usually throws. So, I mean, that was good. But you did say that, he was all over the place a little bit. Yeah, they did hit off him. But what do you see maybe him falling a little? You think he's going to be okay. But
yeah, I think he's going to be okay. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, he's been so good for these years, and he's consistent, he's got his routine. So I don't think there's going to be much of a fall off in him. I think he'll just get back into his routine, and he'll be fine. And hopefully the Tigers, you know, they ended went into the All-Star break on a 5-game winning streak. Let's see how they come out of the All-Star break. I mean, they'll only be playing again till Friday, so it'll be interesting to see how they come out of this break. Do they continue to pick up where they left off, or do they start struggling again?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And besides, if they start struggling or picking up again, the biggest question is, what are they going to do? What's Dave Dombrowski going to do at this deadline? There are so many questions with this team. Regardless of how well they do play, there are still so many questions with consistency. And as you know, I'm sure you've explored and read up on a couple options they could go after. There needs to be consistency at several positions.
Especially second base. That's the biggest one that they really need, that one. You always need pitching help. So that doesn't go without saying. And also they could use another left fielder, good left fielder. So those are the two positions and then of course you always need help in your, whether it's a bullpen or starting, you can always use pitching help.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing more than finding a good quality bullpen guy to stay consistent. And, you know, as many bullpen guys throughout their career, batters start to pick up on a little bit of their pitches. You know, it's different from a starting pitcher. But back to the home run derby here for a second, Earl. I was thinking about this the other day. How cool would it be if each competitor in the home run derby, right? There are eight competitors, right?
Yeah.
If Prince Fielder, let's take Prince Fielder for example. Let's say each batter had one fellow teammate that he was allowed to choose. So let's say Prince Fielder chose Miguel Cabrera, and the two of them competed together jointly in a home run derby. Let's say, look at Texas. You take like a Josh Hamilton, he picks a teammate like Nelson Cruz. Mm-hmm. How cool would that be to have two guys on each team jointly compete in a home run derby and try to win it?
That would be pretty good. You know, you couldn't let as many dudes compete, of course. You probably have to limit. I think now they probably have too many people. When you have eight on each side, you need to just tone it down a little bit, maybe have six, and not let them have so many swings. If they just have four or five or six swings, that's all they get is six swings. That would be fine, and then, you know, maybe you up it more to the second round and then more in the last round.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, you need to get it somewhere under control. Right now, I just think it's too many people for the most part, and they just get too many swings. But a lot of people, I mean, if you like it, then it's probably fine if you like it that way, but I think it does need to be cut down a little bit.
No, I do see your point there. There are a lot of swings and it could be cut down, but the only reason that I do have to say that I would like to see another hitter opposed to a player with another player, so two competing together, the reason for that is because we saw it with Prince Fielder the first round. So many of these hitters need those swings to warm up.
Yes, that's true.
And like a guy like Prince Fielder only hitting five the first round, sometimes these guys who only will hit two or three and then get eliminated right away, you don't really get to see what their potential could be in that home run derby. There could have been any of these guys in years past, they could have been the winners just based off them losing the first round.
Yeah.
And I think with another joint hitter, I think that would create, you would get to see the real potential and the real maximization of each hitter.
Yeah, you know, that thing I've seen in the past, I've seen in some of those, like you say, I've seen guys hit a ton of them in that first round and then not do nothing in the second round. I mean, that's the thing about a home run hitter or a home run derby and things like that.
Right.
You might have a guy I've seen guys hit a ton in the first round, nothing in the second, then come back and win in the third. But I mean, you just never know, in all honesty.
No, definitely, you do never know. But, I mean, are there any home run derbies, Earl, that you remember that really caught your eye in that aspect?
No, not really. I mean, I just remember some guys who were strong hitters. They just went out. And I'm trying to remember some of the names, some of the ones that I saw, or some of the guys they just didn't hit at all. I think it happened to Ken Griffey Jr. one time. He started out one. I know he won one, but another one he just got criticized somewhat, and he stopped after that last one he did. But he's the only one, other than Prince Fielder now being the second person to hit to win two home run derbies. And, you know, he did that as well, Ken Griffey Jr. And other players, you know, they just didn't – it fell apart for them. So it's one of those things. So, you know, if you do well, you probably like to continue doing it if you do well in it. And it's one of those things that, well, if you don't do well, then, you know, you really don't want it anymore.
No, yeah, I hope they wouldn't want it anymore. I mean, if a guy hits zero home runs and and he really falters, I hope he wouldn't want to, you know, maybe have that kind of ego still that he still could do it. But at the same time, Earl, I mean, what if to you was the best home run derby you've seen? I mean, is it Griffey? I mean, this guy, you know, won back-to-back. But even back in the 80s when Cecil Fielder would compete, I mean, there were so many great historical home run derbies that I'm sure that you saw.
Yeah, especially with when the juicing was going on. Yeah, you like those from Cecil Fielder. You like those from the other juices, from Mark McGwire and our Cub guy. You know, they were.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they were. Those were some long. You saw some monster home runs during those, and you know, you sort of never forget those, but you saw some. But, you know, I just wonder, when you watch these home run hitters hitting these 50, 60 miles of fastballs, I always think, man, what would they do if they hit a 89 or 90-mile-an-hour fastball instead of these ones that they're throwing up, you know?
Oh, that's a very good point. And with that, even if they throw it faster, imagine how much harder it's going to come at the fans in the outfield.
Yes.
I mean, there could be so many injuries that could happen from a Justin Verlander 100-mile pitch home run compared to, you know, a Prince Fielder 50-mile-an-hour pitch in the Derby.
Yeah, it's basically when you turn on one of those, if you can turn on a ball that's coming in at almost 100, you just imagine how far is that going to go. Well, I remember watching when it out in McCovey Cove when they were hitting them out there. They were getting people were out there in boats. More people out there in boats trying to catch those home runs in McCovey Cove.
I do remember that. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun, but yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, you just watch it, and you know, you hope you can catch some if it comes your way. But yeah, there were a lot of balls that hit out, and it was good for the fans. Like you say, it is good for the fans. It is good for them, and you know, I know we're going to keep. I know they're not going to dump it or anything.
Right.
We're going to keep seeing it. That's for sure. But it is good for the fans, and if they love it, then you got to have it. I know. I was just reading this morning how Mike Schmidt wants them to change the All-Star game, because, like he said in his day, you know, players played it for the pride, and I don't know if you can make players play the game for pride and try to win one for your league, because now there's so much integration in the league. You know, National League and American League players. You know, they. With interleague play, with that going on, I don't know if you can get back to where the players will just play for the pride of their league. That just seems to be gone at these times.
Yeah, and even besides baseball, for any sport for that matter, you look at football and even the NBA All-Star Game, would you say that even they play for pride in their division or their league?
Yeah, I don't think they do that much. They do it more so for themselves. They, especially in the NBA, they get so much. If they do well, then they'll get some more marketing dollars. And a lot of players are looking to get a contract from some business so they can get more marketing dollars. Which is, it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is these days. Everybody's looking for that almighty buck, and I guess there's nothing to say. Shouldn't be ashamed of it. That's what they're trying to do, is make a little bit more money for themselves. So yeah, that's sports these days, and the way pro sports are going, we'll see more and more guys out there making more money, getting as much money as they can for themselves, because that's the thing. You got such a short career, and you try to maximize it as much as you can.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And these contracts, as much as the labor disputes continue, for me, Earl, these contracts keep getting higher and higher.
They do.
And with the economy the way it is, you have to wonder, you know, how are all these unions gonna really spread out all that money?
Yeah, that's gonna be a problem. It's gonna be one to watch. That's for sure. Hey, you know, we gotta say congratulations to Jordan Weaver, who's going off to the Olympics. Gordon Weaver from DeWitt. So congratulations to her and her quest for becoming Olympic champion. We want to thank everybody for calling today and listening today. I want to thank you and make your You come back tomorrow and check us out right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR. I want you to come back and join us tomorrow right here. If you've never called before, we want you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoon. Call us up and talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We come your way, like I said, Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock. We'll have more guests for you to listen to tomorrow, and we want you to come back and listen to our guests and call them in, call them up, and talk sports with us. So we want to thank you all for listening, and thank you all for coming back to us each and every day right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
From NPR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.